Thank you, Brother Richard. Is this microphone working? I can talk loud enough, so I'll just not use a microphone. Well, Brother, the opportunity is yours now to ask questions, and the way the question meeting will be run is that I'll recognize hands. You raise your hand if you'd like to ask a question. I'll call on you, and then I'll ask the panel to have the first opportunity to answer the questions. But then the audience will also have an opportunity to answer the questions as well. Add a scripture, support the argument, perhaps ask a related question, continue the discussion. So listen carefully as the questions are asked, because after the panel has their chance, I'll call upon you to add your thoughts. So again, I'll recognize hands. I don't know everybody's name here, but if you'll raise your hand, I'll call on you. Yes, sister, what's your question? All right, Brother Ken, we'll give you a chance to, if you can, expand on Ezekiel 39:6. The question particularly being is that if this refers to Israel, I mean, it refers to Russia, how would we understand the present situation in Russia to play out in fulfillment of Ezekiel 39:6? And then if any of the other panelists have a thought, we'll give them the opportunity, and then we'll open the question to all of you.
Okay, I think there's one basic rule we have to follow in connection with interpreting prophecy is not trying to interpret prophecy by today's headlines. I think Russia's in the picture because I feel that Russia is referred to as the leader of the group of nations that go down into Israel, and this I think is given to us in Ezekiel the 38th chapter, at the beginning of the chapter. Verse 2, Son of Man, set thy face against Gog and the land of Magog, and the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal, and the prophecy against him. And the word chief there, by the way, in Hebrew is Rosh. Rosh, prince of Meshach. And ancient Hebrew scholars identify Gog as Russia. And Meshach, they say, is a, according to the old Hebrew, referred to Moscow. And Tubal is a tribe that existed in Russia. And then there from verse 5 and 6, you have other nations that are associated with the Gog and that invasion. I won't take the time to interpret them because that's not related to the question. So I do think on the basis of verses 2 and 3 that Russia is the main leader in this group of nations that invade Israel. What will Russia's economic and military situation be at that time? Well, one of my points was that it wasn't that great that they would be able to take on Western Europe before Western Europe was in the throes of the great revolution of Revelation 16. So that doesn't mean that Russia has to be a competing international power to the United States at that time. But I think that a lot can happen and will happen in Russia before this scenario plays out. plays out, then I think Russia will become more prominent on the world stage again, and that won't go to the reason for that.
Brother Jim or Brother Ray, anything to add on Ezekiel 39:6 and how it might be fulfilled? No, nothing? Anyone in the audience have a thought on this scripture? What's being spoken of here? How it might be fulfilled?
Diane have a thought on it?
Well, let's get Brother Joe's thought first. Brother Joe?
Raise my hand. The question, I have a question. What about the Arab nation? Would they be part of this invasion? I think that they have a very significant part against Israel. It won't be only Russia, but all the Arab nations are going to gather together and try to squash them, push them out to the sea. So I'd like to know some comments on that, too.
All right, let's hold the discussion of the Arab nations and how they relate to this until we finish the question before us, and perhaps we're just about done with it. Any other comments on Ezekiel 39:6? Brother Paul?
Like Brother Chad, I believe you can't describe the prophecy according to the way Russia exists today. She's a military nation. That's all hidden right now because of the transfer of, from communism to the socialism, or to supposedly trying to get a democracy there. It would be very easy for Russia to revert back to a military situation. It would be no marvel. It would be very easy. And with that situation existing in Russia, she would depend on her military might to get what she wants. And I think I think common reasoning would almost put in our minds that we could see this happening. She is one great nation.
Okay. Any other comments on this question before we move on? Sister Sandy?
Sister Applewhat, Diana Dean said of the idols and the paintings and the like coal plants. And I mean, you look at all those nations over there, they've all got the tremendous wealth and influence coming down through that area, so it really would make, you know, sense and probably, you know, but it does come in about the Muslim counterparts being the ones that are going to do the invasion. And that is in their mind.
Okay, good. We'll get to that now, but let me, I'm sorry, Brother Ray.
Yeah. No, I think that we ought not only think in terms of governmental action and military power. I believe that God, and may God, is going to be hordes of masses of people rather than necessarily organized armies in formation with tanks and guns and with airplanes. My understanding has been all along that this God and may God are going to make their invasion at the very climax to the time of trouble. All of these governments back home are going to have their own problems on their own hands. They're going to have the anarchy raging throughout their own areas. They were not going to be in a position to just say they're going to go down to Israel to take a spoil. Rather, I think out of desperation, many of the peoples, in order to enhance their own welfare, terrorists and people of that sort, will go down to plunder and to take the spoil. You don't have to wait for a government to be fully armed to the teeth before such an action can be taken. So I would perhaps answer it in that manner, that I would not necessarily feel that they have to be so militarily prepared.
Okay, good. Well, Sister Diane, I guess the answer you've been given is true, Russia is no longer the superpower it once was, but A, that doesn't necessarily mean they can't still have a prominent role in the fulfillment of the prophecies, or B, they might come back somewhat to the status they previously enjoyed, if not entirely. Do you have a thought or a comment on your own question?
Well, my only thought is that it may be out of need rather than out of power. So it may not be that they have ever attained that status that they once had, but it's not been unusual in the course of history for a country that's underprivileged to result in a warlike conduct.
All right, very good. Let's take up Brother Joe's question now. What about the Arab nations? Where do they fit into all of this? What other scriptures can we perhaps bring up that speak of how the Palestinians, the Saudis, the Arab nations of today might have their place in the sequence of events? Sister Esther and then Brother Paul.
Well, could it be in Ezekiel 38 where it mentions all these and then also further down in the fifth verse,
Libya with them, all of them with shields and helmets. So that would include that other nations do go along with them.
Okay, good, Brother Paul.
I believe they study in Ezekiel, or excuse me, Psalms 83, Isaiah 11 would clarify the Arab nation. The Arab nation, per se, according to Psalms 83 and Isaiah 11, so that the Arab nations will be in subjection before that particular time of Jacob's trouble. So I think we have to place them in the proper sequence of time during these last days.
Okay.
I don't think the Arabs enter into the picture with Jacob.
Any comment from the panel on the place of the Arab nations and their interaction with Israel? Brother Ken?
Well, I concur with an expression made from the floor that Psalms 83 has its play out before the invasion of God and Magog, and that lists a war in which a lot of the Arab nations are involved against Israel. By the way, Psalms 83 does not, well, I won't go any further on that, but as I said earlier. In Ezekiel 38, you have Persia in verse 5. Nations that are associated with Russia. Persia, which of course is Iran, modern Iran. They are not Arab, but they are Muslim. You have Ethiopia, and actually in the Hebrew, which refers to Sudan. And Sudan is a fundamentalist Arab state. Libya, of course, is Arab. And then you have in verse 6, Gomer, which is more, looks on the first in the area of the present republic, former Soviet Republic of Georgia, and all his band, but Gomer swept across Europe all the way to Germany. Then you have Togarmah, or Togarmah. And the sons of Togarmah were Turkmen, and that, of course, would refer to Turkey, but there's an interesting, on the news, after the fall of the Soviet Union, there is a map on the cover of Newsweek that had a red arrow that swept from Turkey to Armenia and all the way into the five Arab republics in Russia today. So these would be the descendants of Togarmah. And I think they will be involved with Russia in this invasion. These Arab countries will be, Arab republics will be involved in Russia. I think Libya in verse 5 does not refer to the current Libya, but it refers to all of the North African states, which are all Arab.
Okay. Brother Bob, did you have a comment?
Is that Muslim Republic of Russia?
Yes. But they are Arab. There's five or four Arab, four or five Arab and they're descendants of, okay, I stand corrected on that. They are Muslim because Turkey is not Arab. Turkey is Muslim. So they would not be Arab, that's right. But the Libya would refer to the northern African states, and they are Arab. So you do have a combination of Islamic, non-Arab states, and Arab states in verse 5. And six that I referred to as associated with Russia and this invasion.
Okay. Anything else from the panel, Brother Ray or Brother Tim, on this question? I'll just add my own quick thought. Pretty much as has been said, I think Psalm 83 is an excellent scripture to study to see primarily the Arab involvement in the attack upon Israel, and I expect that to happen next. Future of today, but next in sequence. After that, a time of living in unwalled villages, and then after that, the time of Ezekiel 38 and 39. It's probably been said, if you look at Ezekiel 38:2, it talks about Magog, the chief prince of Meshech and Tubal, which is a form of Moscow and Tobolsk, the names of the two prominent cities of Russia by which the country of Russia was identified in olden times. So obviously verse 2 is talking about Russia, and then has been said there are some Arab countries allied with them, but that's the sequence as I see it. An attack by predominantly the Arab nations, resolution of that, time of peace, and then the final conflict. Brother Joe, do you have any thought on your own question about how the Arabs fit into these final battles?
I think there is one scripture someplace to state that God will bring all nations against Israel. I'm thinking that maybe even the United States, sometime before Armageddon is finished, that all nations will be against Israel. Not only God and Magog and the Arab nations, but even England and the United States and all the rest of the countries. This is a possibility. I don't know what's going to cause this, but this seems to be one of my thoughts.
All right, good. Any other comments on the question we've discussed so far about the Arabs, the Russians, those allied with them? Sister Merrily.
Now, are we saying this is all fire? I mean, the whole point of this is Ezekiel, right? I mean, it's Elijah's vision. So how are we relating these last two questions into Ezekiel's vision?
Okay.
Is this the fire that we're talking about? Is it the end of the fire? Is it the revolution of the states turning into the fire?
I'll leave it to the panel to start that. We've been talking again about Ezekiel 38:6 and related scriptures. When we talk about those scriptures, how do we relate them back to 1 Kings 19? Is it the wind, the earthquake, the fire, all of the above, none of the above? Who has a thought? Brother Ray?
My reaction would be it would be the final phase. It would be the fire phase when all of this Armageddon begins and ends. Because it would be the finale of this kind of trouble. All of the tearing down process will have preceded it, and out of all the nations who would then be in turmoil, Israel will seem to be the most stable and the most prosperous, and therefore the most prone for plunder. And at that point, when that is happening, there will be nothing left. Just be ready for the kingdom. There will be the fire.
Okay. Anything else from the panel? Brother Ken?
Well, there's no doubt that Brother Russell felt that the invasion of God would take place during the final stage of the time of trouble, and that was probably the anarchy stage of his thinking. The brethren, I think, have varying views on when the invasion will take place. Some feel it will take place before the churches come back to power in Western Europe and the United States. I think the majority feel it will take place sometime before anarchy and after the churches come back to power in Europe. The way I harmonize in my mind is that I think the first blast of revolution and anarchy will come on Christendom. And that will be the earthquake of Revelation 16. I'm inclined to think, and I'm not dogmatic about this at all, that for the most part, Russia and the third world countries escaped that first blast of revolution and anarchy. And it's at that time Russia wants to take advantage of the situation and move into Israel. First, they're going to take advantage of the situation and go attack Western Europe in order to hook in their jaw and bring them back down to Israel. And I think then the revolution takes place among the nations that are in that alignment. The revolution takes place among them while they're in Israel in anarchy, and that sweeps back to their home government, the land of Magog, the fire, and the land of Magog, and all that I first earlier.
Merrily, I think the answer to your question is yes, this takes place during the last stage, the final stage, when the fire of anarchy is burning. I would just add this. Remember what we said before, that the wind starts first, but it doesn't stop before the earthquake begins. The wind keeps on going, and then the earthquake begins and keeps on going, and then the fire begins and keeps on going. So at the very end, you have the wind, earthquake, and fire all happening at the same time. And so these scriptures seem to describe war, which is more like the wind. But again, this is a very last final stage description when the wind, earthquake, and fire are all still in operation. That's what I would place these scriptures. Sister Fiorillo, what's your first name?
Marion.
Marion.
With anarchy, it's hard to put it as a national thing because we read two scriptures that talk about every man's hand being against his brother, and that's actually something on a very personal level. And I was just wondering if Ms. Emma might have any ideas as to what's going to be the event or the belief at that time that's going to cause every man's hand to be against his neighbor. But it's got to be something that everyone's disagreeing about. So what would that be?
Okay, so you're looking for a concrete event here in Connecticut that would create everyone's hand. Is it what you're asking, or is it what will make it happen across the whole world?
Across the whole world.
Across the whole world, okay. And it might be more than one thing. It may not be the same thing everywhere, but let's explore that. What does the panel think? What's going to happen to cause this great instability, this anarchy? What will be the event, the issue? Brother Ray and then Brother Ken.
You know, we in America are living in an Alice in Wonderland environment. We are just been so sheltered all these years. We don't know what poverty is really. We haven't the foggiest idea what it is to be without. 2/3 of the world outside of America do not have it that good. There are whole continents. You take the continent of Africa and even parts of the subcontinent of India. You will find that poverty is there at a point, and anarchy is just under the surface. A brother spoke of 56 wars being fought each year or thereabouts. What are those wars? They are revolutions. They are people struggling for food. They are trying to keep alive. It's a matter of survival. They are desperate. And the countries are just trying to hold down the dampener. Now, they are at a point of anarchy, believe me. It's only that there is help being pumped in to hold the peace. The United Nations comes there to put borders and patrols so that they can kind of keep hostile parties apart. When all of that is withdrawn, or when there is not sufficient resources, given the global economy now, when America's economic bubble bursts, and we begin to get problems in this country, and we are going to get them whether we realize it or not. We have been living way up high on the hog when America begins to feel what it is like to have unemployment and bread lines and hunger. This country will not be able to tolerate it. This present generation is not going to accept it, but the generation that I was born into, when I saw hunger lines, I saw people selling apples in the street. I've seen people begging for jobs. No longer will they tolerate that. They will want it, and they will demand it, and they will take it, regardless. I think that will happen in this land. And that's why the master said, make sure that your flight comes before winter, because it's going to be severe. And we, I say, ought to take advantage of every opportunity we have now because we don't know how long this will continue. Having said that, then, the rest of the world is going to be in a worse plight. That will certainly be the seeds for a desperate need. And the law of the jungle says that survival is the first law. And they will claw, they will kill, they will plunder, they will murder just to get to keep alive. They'll come down to that brutal animal state and level of the survival. That's what I think, Brother.
All right, thank you, Brother Ken.
Okay, remember, the anarchy follows the revolution. The revolution destroys the government. There's no government in each one of these countries. I'm sure there will be people that are claiming to have some influence, but their influence will be nil. When I used to work in New York for 8 years and go in on a bus, and you know, you get to know everybody on the bus, or the same people around, and you move around, you sit to a different person, you talk, and so there's this one girl or lady, she was about 10 years older than me. She just come recently over from Germany, and every once in a while I sit next to her. And she, I have a question there about the fall of Nazi regime and things in Germany at that time. She says the worst period in Germany not under Hitler, but at the fall of Hitler's regime, the fall of the Nazi control, before the Allies could move in and set up a government. He says, if I told you the things I had to do then, you would never believe me. And I would be ashamed to tell you. Under those conditions, people are against their neighbors. There's just so much food. Not enough for everybody. Virgin, I just talked to a younger gentleman, 30 my age, from Kyrgyzstan. And I asked him, you know, what we were talking about when the Soviet Union fell, and now all the republics became independent. I said, we had no government for 2 years. He said, that government was there, it meant nothing. And he said, it was every man for himself. And there was not a food, there was not enough clothes, there was not enough heat. And you had to survive. Well, how did you survive? Every man stands against his neighbor.
I see our time is up. I'll add my own quick thought and then ask Sister Marianne if you have yours. Well, get Brother Bob's first.
Brother Gregory saw what Brother Kenneth was just describing firsthand.
Okay. Brother Gregory, it's mentioned that you may well have gone through some of this poverty and lack of food that's been referenced here.
Well, I wasn't that, honestly, myself. When the Nazi already fell, they kept certain groups in Europe that the government was not supplying themselves anymore because the Allied forces destroyed all their centers. And they were confused, they just fight for their lives. And the Russian was unable to take control because the army was focused to Germany, and it was divided. The Soviet army was one foot was naked, another had shoes. I saw myself. And when they came, they didn't ask me, "Did you see the Nazi soldier?" They asked me, "Do you have a breath, piece of bread?" That was asking first, because they were starving and everything, and it was very short. So they were unable to make any work. It took more than 2 years, even when the war was still over there, more than 2 years, they was collecting people from the sideways. Everywhere, more people died after this time of civilians than during the war of bombings. That was the worst thing, so there was cemetery, no one was waiting for them. Dying for starvation and killed just looking, maybe you have seen something for you. There was nothing. So they was using anything, knife and this. That was the result of anarchy. So when they came, this strong hand of anarchy, it was much better than anything from this. Even prison was something better because they give something. Maybe, a spoiled cabbage, but they gave something. But outside was nothing. So anarchy was really took more lives than the war itself.
Thank you, Brother Gregory. Again, Sister Marianne, I think the question you've gotten is that a struggle for literal survival against starvation coupled with an absence of restraint in the form of any government or police to hold back the evil passions of mankind is what will cause every man's hand to be against his neighbor. And I think compounding the poverty driving people to go against their neighbors will be all the other conflicts we've seen already, little spurts happening in the past. Racism, racial divides among people. National divides among people. We've seen it in the tribes in Africa, the Hutus and the Tutsis killing each other in Kosovo and Bosnia and other places in Eastern Europe. We've seen a lot of what really could be described as anarchy already in those passions when unrestrained by law and order. So I think it's a multiple of things. Do you have a comment on your own question? Thank you. Well, see, our chairman is up. Our discussion has been excellent. I hope it was profitable for you. And we'll turn the platform back over to Brother Richard.
Well, thank you, brethren. I'd like to thank the panelists for the studies and for answering the questions that the brethren had. What we'll do is we'll sing hymn 217. We will remain seated, and after the prayer, we have a few brief announcements. We will ask Brother Tim Armstrong if he would please thank the Lord for his blessings and ask a blessing upon the food. So let's sing two verses of 217. We have a few brief announcements, brethren. First, we have a message of Christian love from Brother Glenn and Sister Rochelle Pryor, and also love from Brother Ragarese and Sister Marilyn Ragarese, Brother Rolando and Sister Marilyn Ragarese. And also, we have, as the program states, we have lunch provided for us. Not only did our brethren help supply the spiritual food, now they're inviting us to partake of the natural food. This note was handed to me. Since it is not raining, the brethren can get the food in the house and then come into the garage and eat it together where we can have our fellowship. So the Lord bless you.